Hi, everyone. Well, 1:30. We're going to start on time. Do we have a quorum, Mr. Baker?
We do.
Nice. Next item on the agenda is audience participation. Do we have any audience participation?
We have none requested.
Okay, so I'm going to take up the audience participation then. All right, so since our last meeting was, I believe it was like May 15th, as we all know, sadly, we lost Joe Paradise on July 8th. The Summit County Engineer, in notifying the rest of the county engineers, wrote a small tribute to Joe that I'd love to share with everyone if we could. I thought it was really well done, and, you know, what better to come from an employer that he worked with and knew for 50-some years. So if you'd let me, I'm going to read what he had to say, and then maybe we'll have a moment of silence, if that's okay.
Sure.
So this is from Al Brubaker, Summit County Engineer. It's with a heavy heart that we notify you of the passing of Joe Paradise. Joe has touched so many lives after 55 years of engineering work in Ohio. He's a graduate of Penn State University after 30 years at ODOT, retired as the District Deputy Director of Production. He then worked for the next 9 years at GPD, P&N Right-Away Services, and McCoy Associates until joining the office in January 2009 as Deputy Director of Engineering Services. Joe is a fierce advocate for meeting high engineering standards in all areas of public service, roads, bridges, subdivision design and construction, commercial development, and traffic access management. He was a member of the Summit County Planning Commission, AMATS TAC Committee, and Policy Committee, Joint Safety Committee of Bath, Copley, Fairlawn, and the Township Association of Summit County, among other transportation engineering-related associations. Joseph K. Paradise was more than an engineer. He was a builder of communities, a guardian of standards, and a tireless public servant. His work ethic, his sharp mind, and his unwavering commitment to excellence have left a mark on Summit County and on all those who have had the privilege of working alongside him. Sincerely, Al Brubaker. I thought it was a really wonderful tribute from Al, and it really summed up the service that Joe gave to our community. So if you don't mind, if we could just pause for a moment of silence, I'd really appreciate it, and salute to the life and service of Joseph K. Paradise. Thank you very much, everyone. Okay, so we're going to move on. Going into the minutes, we've got attachment 2A in your packet from our May 15th, 2025 meeting. Was there any revisions or changes to the meeting minutes?
No, we approved. Addison.
We have a motion to approve. Do I have a second?
Bowling, second.
Thank you, Jim. We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Moving into staff reports. In your packet is attachment 3A, the financial progress report. Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 3A, through June 30th, 2025, our fiscal year, we expended 80% of our budget. Some of those funds will be carried over. As some of you might also know, we did have a retirement over the summer of Phyllis Jividen. Some of you may have worked with her on bike trail type planning stuff. So we wish her well in her retirement. But with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Hearing no questions on the financial progress report, a motion is required. Do I have a motion to accept the financial progress report?
Chair Rittman.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second, Judge.
We have a motion and a second to accept the financial progress report. Any discussion whatsoever? If not, I'll signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Next up is going to be our technical progress report. I believe that's Mr. Stewart.
Yes, thank you. And hello, everybody. Just a quick update today. Just wanted to mention that since our May meeting, when we were wrapping up our plan, our TIF, our work program, short breather. We've kind of been diving back in. We're involved kind of on the very tail end of several planning studies, three different planning studies, two of which are connecting communities. Those are both in the home stretch. Also the regional signal inventory that we've been talking about for a little over a year. That's on our desks to review, so we're kind of on the home stretch of that too. And you know, we're getting ready to dive into the 2025 funding round, which Curtis will be talking about a little bit later here. So a lot going on and a lot more about to be going on here. So that's all I have, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Stewart? If not, thank you very much. We're going to go to attachment 3C, the AMATS federal funds report in your packet, presented by Ms. Prater.
Thank you. So we started fiscal year 2026 on July 1st, and so far, the only funds that we've expended so far is air quality and rideshare out of the CMAQ fund, and a little over $7,000 that was refinanced for Worcester State reconstruction. This past week, we also encumbered Metro and PARTA's CMAQ funds. So if anybody's here from Metro and PARTA, please fill out the grant applications to get your money. But it has been transferred to FTA. STBG allocations, if you look at the allocations for this year, it's much, much lower than it has been in the past. That's because we got a $2.1 million loan last year, and it automatically comes out before the beginning of the year. We will not have enough money to cover all our STBG allocations for this year, so we will be going for another loan this year. We're expected to. Carbon reduction program, we had about $180,000 that we're carrying forward into this year. That should cover all of the expenditures that we have for this year for CRP. So we should need no loan. CMAQ allocations, we actually had a $2 million loan right at the end of the year. It's not a traditional loan. It's kind of done through ODOT directly. We don't actually sign anything. They just kind of transfer the money around. Based on the CMAQ committee's approval. We do not have enough funds in 2026 either to cover all of our CMAQ allocations, so we will probably need another internal loan again. TASA, we are currently negative in TASA for 2026 as well, and the carry forward funds from 24 and 25 will probably cover almost all of it. There may be a minimal loan needed for that. So, but we are trying to run a little in the negative and get loans so that we can get projects programmed faster. If other people have money and we can get it sooner, that's our goal. So, anyone have any questions?
With these loans, we're talking about internal loans. What's the source?
Other MPOs. Like last year, we got like $2.1 million from OKI down in Cincinnati. And basically, we get $2.1 million last year, and then we automatically give it back this year. And they have probably the projects this year that need the funds. So, and sometimes the loans actually help these communities because they don't have enough carryover balance sometimes, and they would actually lose the money if they don't loan it out. So it kind of helps everyone. We're helping people spend their money so they don't lose it, and we're getting our projects done quicker. So that's kind of our goal. Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you, Amy. That was a good explanation. Thank you. Under old business, Mr. Baker, do we have any old business?
We have no old business.
All right. Moving on, we've got new business. In your packet is attachment 5A, and that's the draft of our 2025 funding policy guidelines, and that's going to be discussed by Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So, as many of you know, every 2 years we do a round of funding. It's one of the most exciting times at AMATS. We know we're going to maybe make about 70% of people upset, but it's still quite a bit of fun, and we see a lot of good projects come in. But as the first real step into kicking off our round of funding is basically reviewing our funding policy guidelines which for those of you that aren't familiar, our funding guidelines outline basically how the staff is instructed to score project applications that we get in for our different programs. So the first step of that is meeting with our TAP TIP subcommittee to kind of go through the nitty-gritty details of the scoring process. We met with them twice over the summer to try to refine the recommendations, and listed in this document, attachment 5A, are the major bullet points of things that were suggested to be changed. Some of the changes are very administrational, or you know, kind of making sure our wording accurately reflects the way we do things. But I did want to touch on some of the things that really do change how the program works. So the biggest one, in my mind, is we did increase the resurfacing funding cap from 800,000 to 1 million. A lot of our communities have experienced inflationary pressures. These projects have gotten more expensive. But what we're doing as a compromise into was that it's only for the priority project of the community. So each community gets to submit one priority project. That project can have a cap of $1 million. If there's a second project of a community that scores, they can only cap out still at the 800,000. So the purpose of that is to help with inflationary pressures, but still also make sure we can get the money out to as many communities as possible to make sure that we can get necessary resurfacing done in the region. Another thing that was changed is we actually included warranted roundabouts along with what now in the SDDG program are we score for signal projects. So we had sort of this broad scoring criteria of if it's a signal project and the PCI is fine, the pavement condition rating is fine, you get 20 points if it's a signal project because it helps with safety, congestion, etc. We added basically if it's a signal and or roundabout project, it gets 20 points minimum. So a minor change, but I think a good one that basically, so if you have an intersection project that you're coming to AMATS with, but ODOT resurfaced it 5 years ago, you're still going to get at least 20 points, even though the pavement condition is okay. Another one is we increase the amount of points we give if it's listed on the AMATS high crash report from 15 to 20. We updated some complete streets components just to clarify how we score things so that it was more transparent. We will require transit authorities to sign off on bus shelter installations. So we're looking for them to provide feedback to us to say, yes, the community asked us if we wanted a bus shelter here. Yes, we said yes. And we're moving forward in that way just to avoid kind of the ambiguity of, you know, was this really truly committed to or not? And so that the RTA can have a say on if they think it's the right spot for a shelter. Also, then, we are reducing the ADT points for resurfacing projects that used to be a max of 15 points, but now it's going to be reduced to a max of 12 points. But at the same time, we're going to be increasing the strip paving scoring from 7 points to 10 points. So in some ways, communities, if you have more than 12,000 ADT, you're just going to get the max 12 points. But then if you do strip paving, instead of getting 7 points, you can make up that points by getting additional 3 points for that, which used to be a lower score. And that was a compromise from the communities, as you can imagine. When you're having the conversation between large and small communities, urban, rural communities, we're trying to find a way to make sure that, you know, everybody feels like there's an equitable program for them to have access to those funds. AMETS estimates the following funding to be available: $11 million in STBG, $11 million in our resurfacing, simple resurfacing program, and $3.5 million in TASA. Which is our transportation set aside for bicycle and pedestrian program. So what we do now is this is sort of the open month to share with all of our membership, to review it, provide any feedback. We will be asking in September for the approval of this document at our policy meeting. Once that's approved, our hope would be that applications would be posted either that afternoon or the following Friday. Or the next Friday, and then we would be asking for applications by November 7th of 2025. Staff then will score those over the winter, and we'll be coming back to you with first a draft of the scores, and then we'll be asking for board approval of those most likely in March of 2026, possibly January, depending on how smoothly things go. But with that, I'll stop there and be happy to answer any questions, or you know, you're welcome to contact us outside of this scope to of this meeting to if you have questions as well. So.
Okay, any additional questions or anything like that? Obviously, comments are due here soon before our next meeting, which in September we'll vote on these guidelines. So reach out to staff if you have questions.
Yeah, which fiscal year?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we're looking, it's probably going to be 2030, 2031, maybe a little 2029, depending on, you know, how everything smooths out. But we're definitely, you know, definitely a few years in the future. And obviously, and this goes without saying, but the highway bill only goes through next, the end of September. So all of these promises that we would be committing to is, you know, contingent on that funding still being there.
It's like
in the
a promise
future.
Ring.
Yeah, it's like a promise ring. I can still get out of it easily without embarrassing the family. Yeah. It's not an engagement. It's not an engagement.
Great commentary.
Thank you.
We're gonna run down to new business item B. There is attachment 5B. It's gonna be our congestion mitigation air quality CMAQ funding program applications overview by Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. So this is kind of a separate funding source from all of those that Curtis just spoke about, but one of our other big pots of money is CMAQ, which, if you're not familiar, stands for Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Funding. So this is a longstanding federal program that funds transportation projects and programs that help to improve air quality and relieve congestion. Because this program is managed as part of a statewide process, there's a statewide committee that ultimately selects the projects, of which AMS is a member. The funding rounds are typically held a little bit in advance of all the stuff Curtis was just talking about. So we typically do that the summer before the fall funding round. And so, indeed, that's what we did this time. We had project applications due on July 18th, and in total, 19 applications were received. A summary of those applications can be found in Attachment 5B, but they include a wide variety of projects. And those projects are pretty much all across our planning area. The majority are in Summit County, but there are, I think, five or four that are in Portage County. So we had a nice cross-section of different types of projects. Since we received those applications in mid-July, our staff has been very busy working on the eligibility, the scoring, the initial analysis, the cost-benefit analysis that goes into this program. So it's a pretty intensive process, but we've pretty much wrapped up what we were able to score through our staff. One of the things I did want to say, it's a lot like a lot of our other funding programs, they kind of have become more and more popular. So unfortunately, only a handful of projects we expect will be able to be funded of the 19. So both the dollar amount and the number of project applications has exceeded past rounds. What we're estimating is probably just a little bit north of $12.5 million is what we expect to receive within our region, but that number is kind of a soft number that could change a little bit. But, you know, with a $69 million ask, you know, we know that we won't be able to fund most of these projects. So as far as a timeline, we've pretty much wrapped up what we can do for now, and then at the end of September, we will be submitting our applications and the scoring that we've done to the statewide committee. It's the Ohio Statewide Urban CMAQ Committee. It's us and the other large eight MPOs across the state. And then that committee will get together in October to make recommendations on which projects move forward. And then that will ultimately be approved at the end of November. So that's where we are right now, and that's just a brief overview of the program, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Matt, show my ignorance, but when you're making the awards, do you choose to award the entire amount that's requested, or might you say for somebody asked for $2 million and said, well, we can give you $1 million?
That's a great question. Okay. It depends. We have the ability, especially if a project is scalable, where we might partially fund it. I think in our 2023 round, the projects that we selected, we did fully fund all of those. But we might have to make those decisions where we say, you know, sometimes certain projects are more scalable than others. So it sort of
becomes a can you at this point. In other words, you'll offer $1 million towards the two, and we say, well, we can't get $1 million, and then the million goes back into the pot to be awarded somewhere else. Is that kind of how it works?
It could be. It could be.
Yeah, and I think the reality is usually what will happen during these sessions at the state level is, you know, let's say based on our scoring, we get up to $12 million with the first four projects fully funded. So then we have that fifth project out there that if we get it fully funded, it's going to be over our allocation, but we could do a partial possibly. Usually that's the project where what AMATS will do is we'll push to get a full funding. And typically, you know, that committee looks at things the same way we manage our programs, which is we want money out the door, so it's safer to over-program than to under-program. But there could be a case, like especially if it was, say, a transit and it was close and you could say, well, you could do three buses instead of four, you'd probably try to do a partial. But if it was a large $6 million job, you might even try to jump down the list to a job that was a little bit smaller because in likelihood a $6 million project like Matt Scaling isn't scalable to $1 million. So it is sort of like in the moment as we're advocating for our projects, kind of how we can make it work.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. All right, going on to resolutions. We have two resolutions today. Starting in your packet 6A, we have Resolution 2025-10, approving Amendment Number 1 to Fiscal Year 26-29, Transportation Improvement Program. They're going to add two projects, add phase funding in two projects, and delete three projects. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Larry. Yes, so we're going to be adding two projects, which are not AMATS-funded projects. They are state or other funding, but they have to be added because they do have some sort of federal funds in them. So, and then adding phase funding to two projects is pretty straightforward. And then deleting three projects, two of the projects, six and seven, are ODOT projects, and so they have asked that we delete them because they decided not to do them for whatever reason. And then number five, Monroe Road, is canceled, but it's actually not canceled. It's actually merging with another project that they are doing. So the funding has just been rolled over under a different PID, and this PID is being basically canceled. So it's not actually canceling that project. So, anybody have any questions?
All right, thank you, Ms. Preter. Motion is required for approval of Resolution 2025-10. Do we have a motion?
Bowling, move to approve.
Thank you, Jim. Do we have a second?
Rich Bowling, second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve Resolution 2025-10. Any discussion at all? All in favor for Resolution 2025-10, signify by saying aye, please.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Moving on to Attachment 6B in your packet, it will be Resolution 2025-11 to add newly awarded funds for Metro RTA Fiscal Year 26-29, TIF Amendment Number 2. Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 6B
adding capital funds to the TIP for Metro for three projects. In July, ODOT awarded Metro $1.1 million in federal funding from their Ohio Transit Partnership Program. These funds are flexed over from highway for transit use. The projects are for maintenance shop equipment, furniture, and fitness equipment. The source of these federal funds is the Carbon Reduction Program. All three projects are scheduled in fiscal year 2026. Staff and TAC last week requested approval of Resolution 2025-11. And we will be happy to answer any questions you might have regarding Attachment 16.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Any questions at all? All right, a motion is required to approve Resolution 2025-11. Do I have a motion?
Move to approve.
Thank you. We have a motion. Do we have a second, please?
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second for approval of Resolution 2025-11. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of motion 2025-11, signify by saying aye, please.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. That is all our resolutions for today. We're moving on to other business, and we'll have a small presentation, I believe, from Mr. Nathan Lepo, AICP and Director of Planning and Strategic Development with Metro RTA. You have the floor.
Thank you. Thanks again. Sorry, Bobby, you have 10 more minutes. this is a continuation, kind of. It is a standalone from last week, and it is over BRT. And BRT is Bus Rapid Transit. I kind of asked last week, what is Bus Rapid Transit? There are many different definitions of Bus Rapid Transit. And the FTA is essentially light rail with wheels, which is fine. That's one version of Bus Rapid Transit. Another version of Bus Rapid Transit that I would say, at least my version of Bus Rapid Transit, is heavy investment along a chosen corridor. However, I'd also argue it is very similar to the Complete Streets project. When we are seeing BRT projects now, it's not just bus lanes, it is sidewalks, it is bike lanes, it is safer pedestrian properties across roads, and it's upgrades in utilities, including TSP, or Transit Signal Prioritization, or preemption shared in municipalities between their services and the transportation network. I'm going to focus today mostly on goal 4, which is the economic vitality or the economic development portion of BRT. The first BRT project really was in 2008 when it started kicking off, and we're finally really starting to understand. We have the data from Cleveland and Cuyahoga County of just how important BRT is when it comes to economic development and the differences between fast corridors of buses and BRTs. I'm asked a lot, like, well, why don't you just bump up your bus by 5 minutes? And there are very distinct differences between BRT and fast corridors when it just comes to buses. So again, why Bus Rapid Transit? The list is growing. I'm going to focus on the red box today. If you want to know more, I'll flash up my information at the end of this. But so increased accessibility, workforce infrastructure, economic growth, and housing options. In my mind, that's all economic development. BRT has a positive influence on all of this. And then the four slides that I'll show, just for time's sake, Bobby. It is a catalyst for transit-oriented development.
The
numbers show it, including improved workforce access and then property value uplift. I'll kind of show the property value uplift for the mid-sized cities. It's tough to compare, us to Cleveland or us to New York City. There is finally some data for the smaller mid-sized cities.
and then growth and quarter revitalization. I'm just going to kind of go over what Lakota has going on for the most part. Again, my words are up in red, so I don't want to mix that up between Cuyahoga County's development trend in Cuyahoga County study and myself. But so they've done, they've been following along the two of these studies for quite a while, and what they're finding is transit-oriented development is pretty huge, or transit in economic development terms is huge for Cuyahoga County. One-third of all building value in the last 5 years that has occurred in Cuyahoga County has occurred or is basically because of or in relation of transit. That is why these companies have chosen to locate where they are, is because of the ability to get people to the workforce. However, one thing that they are noticing is the bigger cities, so that the central cities, their zoning is able to better take advantage of transit-oriented development. They're better, basically, they're able to accept higher density. So the farther you go out in more suburbs, the less likely that they are able to take into account the higher densities that usually go along with transit corridors. And with that in mind, when you talk about BRT, much of the reason that of these values are associated. So when you talk about buses, again, you tend to think of a pole and a little sign on it. BRT is not that. BRT is a stop itself is between $1 and $5 million. So what that tells the developer is, one, that stop's not going anywhere. You know, in 50 years, that bus stop's still going to be there. So that allows that developer to be a lot more secure in putting their money with closer to that bus stop. And essentially, you know, you can think as it's a donut. So within a quarter mile, you're gonna see the values of that property be a little higher, and then about a quarter mile, half mile, 1 mile out is when you kind of see those residual property values start to become more normalized. And we see that, I guess in the next slide, but also improved workforce access. This is actually a 35 study, but there were 15 cities that had BRT. So this is kind of the BRT points of the study, and I have a link down the bottom if you want to look at it. But so this was after the pandemic. This study has been done. So it's basically been found that the BRT, so in a BRT is basically, so 10 minutes is the service length. So every 10 minutes a bus comes. So the whole idea with the BRT is not, you don't ever have to look at your watch. So you go to a stop, don't have to think about it, the bus picks you up, you get to where you need to go. So what that does, again, it creates this comfort level. You don't have to worry about when a bus comes, you don't have to look at schedules. It makes things a lot more comfortable. And that creates a lot more, it's just so much more efficient. I'll go over the numbers later for that, but 24% of all new jobs in the counties where they did the studies that have BRTs after the pandemic, all new jobs were created along within a half mile of BRT stations themselves. But there are some rules for that, and they do have to be these high-quality stations. And again, zoning in these cities have to be able to handle it. That's another important policy point to make. I'll go on to the next one. This is really the main one for me. I've kind of shown this slide before, property value uplift. And I mentioned the health line. So it went in 2008. I have a $6 billion in private development. About a 10-mile corridor. If you read the numbers now, they're estimating about $9.5 billion in private development that's gone along the Health Line corridor. But then you can look at Grand Rapids. It's pretty similar to Akron, to be quite frank. They put their Silver Line in before the pandemic. They're seeing about a 2.5-to-1 ratio return on investment, about $1 to $2 billion in corridor development since then. Keep in mind, there was a pandemic in the middle there, so there's a little bit of a hiccup. And then Fort Collins, a little more than that, about $350 million in development. It's a smaller city than us. And then Richmond, Virginia is too soon to tell. It just went in, so we don't have the data on that. However, they are attributing much of their downtown revitalization to their BRT implementation. So growth and corridor revitalization. If there's a corridor, and you can probably think of a few enacted that need revitalized, or think of many cities. So in Columbus, so what's going on in Columbus? So, you know, the way I think about it is it's just kind of a fact, whether they want to or not. You know, all these cities are competing with each other for jobs, for economic development, money. So these are essentially what our neighbors are doing. Columbus just passed a voter-approved $8 billion sales tax. So in Columbus, they were paying 0.5% sales tax, which is what we do here for Metro and Summit County. They now pay 1% in Columbus. They now have an 8% sales tax. And it's a 25-year window for these numbers. Service expansion will be 45% more go-to services over these 25 years, and the timeline and phasing. A lot of this is VRT-focused. There'll be three lines for VRT. They expect to break ground for their first VRT in 2025, but their next two VRTs, it's about a five-year time horizon to plan these. There'll be two more VRTs going in by 2030. However, it's not just bus lines. They're including 150 miles of new sidewalk, bikeways, and trails. So, as I talk about these BRT corridors, again, as a community, keep in mind that this is true corridor revitalization. It's not just buses. And then another thing I do want to mention as well is through 2050, their plan is 500 more miles of pedestrian bike infrastructure. So, that's a lot of extra miles of bike and walk paths that would be popping up in Columbus. And this is who we're competing with. Toledo has BRT that's going into COG funding. Cleveland has two more in the books. Columbus does. Cincinnati does. And so does Dayton. So we are truly a little bit behind when it comes to BRT strategy. Huh. And then I just want to go over our BRT again. Proposed corridors. We went through a very long feasibility study. It was done in 2023. We looked at every corridor that we service. It was broken down essentially what is four phases. I'll zoom in a little bit. Where we are in the steps, I'll have four slides to go over. Where we are essentially is the FTA is going to put us in a lane where we need to choose which phase is next. Once we choose that next phase, we're basically kind of put into a slot into capital investment, grant, project development. Once you kind of get into that slot, it's kind of a go. Like, you don't get out of it, you're going for it. So that's kind of why we hit the pause button. Just to kind of catch our breath. It's an interesting time as well. We're trying to see what's going on with funding. If anyone can give me that crystal ball, that'd be great. But long story short, after we get through our locally preferred alternative, we essentially get into NEPA documentation and 30% engineering documentation as well. But anyways, these are the proposed corridors. There are four of them. Right now, I'll just mention these are not in phase. This is like intended 1, 2, 3, 4. They're just labeled that way. So phase one would go down South Arlington. It is our current route two. Phase two, we have labeled here, would go down into Barberton. It is our current route eight. Phase three is our current route one. It is West Market. And phase four, shown here, is our current route 10, Howard and State Street to North. I'll just zoom in. I don't know if it's really any better to see. It's probably harder to see. But there are for phase one, which is the one that goes down to South Arlington, there is, so this is where the locally preferred alternative would come in. It would influence for us where Akron would like to see the line go, whether it be East Exchange or Market. It would also influence where there's room in the right-of-way for where there could be a bus lane, for instance, where there would be more people that would use their services, which companies would use their services more, but essentially shoots down South Arlington. And right now, believe it or not, South Arlington on Route 2, we have 850,000 passengers per year, which is pretty good. So for CIG scoring right now, that would put us in the lane for about $70 million to $60 million in federal funding, to put things into perspective. That's what we would bring to the table from federal funding alone. And we'd probably bring a chunk of local funding as well. That would be, in my mind, that would be a corridor for corridor revitalization. Just broader. What we have labeled phase two, and all of these start at our transit center. So it's kind of the link. We have a radio network. Everything starts and stops at our transit center. The current route is our Route 8. Our ridership is right around 330,000 currently, but that's with a headway of 30 minutes. Next week, starting on Monday, that'll change to 15 minutes. When you change your headways and you double your headways, it's not doubling the passenger count. We expect to see it kind of creep into about 700,000 people riding within a year. It takes about a year for it to creep up. It's a 10-mile segment, and it goes, it starts again, FAP. It would hit Kenmore and then, of course, Barberton. We see this as an exciting opportunity as well. Potential phase three, again, starts at RKP, Robert K. Pass Transit Center, and it would essentially shoot down West Market Street. It's our current Route 1, about 11 miles. Every one of these phases is somewhere in the range of 10 miles. I threw out the number last week. It's about $6 million a mile when you break it all down for BRT. So do that math. And if you remember the number that I threw out for the CIG funding, they'll get us pretty close to the number that we're thinking. But anyways, Route 1 ridership currently is 750,000 people a year. It has all the fiber in the ground. Our biggest issue for this would definitely be right-of-way issues. And then phase four, it would shoot up Main Street, Howard Street, and State Street. It's a Route 2. 30-minute headway again, ridership of about 300,000. We would love to bump that to a 15-minute headway as well, but with construction, we're not going to touch that at all. So, with that, that's all I have. Are there any questions?
What's a headway mean?
Headway is how fast, so 15 minutes, that's how fast the bus comes. So if you're waiting at a bus stop, every 15 minutes that bus comes.
So maybe this is what they did in Cleveland on East 4th.
On Euclid, probably.
Yeah. Euclid to East 4th.
Yeah. It's called the Health Line in Cleveland.
Yeah.
But again, like that's the Cadillac. It was the first bill. It was $220 million to build that one in 2008.
Oh.
So that one has a complete 100% dedicated bus route or bus lane. So like cars don't. And it's right in the middle.
They might accidentally get in that lane. I might know that personally.
Yeah.
And I could say my name.
You might.
That is not exactly. We're not proposing the Cadillac in Akron. I think it'd be more reasonable probably to have a lower cost version. There's also a term called an LRT. So it's more of like a HRT hybrid version where you're kind of sharing the road between TSP. You're using technology to basically open the road back up to cars. You're able to share it versus kicking the cars out of the lane, which really makes people unhappy. So there are new options since 2008 to make things more equitable. Anything else? Yeah.
Nathan, is this presentation available on the website or
I have.
Happy to make it available if you're comfortable with us.
Sure it away.
That's a good idea.
We can put it on the AMATS website.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if anyone wants to talk further, I'd love to come and give more presentations, talk to whatever staff you have. Love to. I've given the phrase, bring the band back together. If you're along any of these routes, look for an email. We'd love to come talk to you. These are not dictations. We 100% plan on working with everyone on this. It'll be a collective effort. And with that in mind, I mentioned we're also doing a TSP, Transit Signal Prioritization effort. We don't see why. TSP is heavily required for bus rapid transit. We as Metro don't see why it has to be 100% completely connected. So we're going to get out and try to start an effort for the county for transit signal prioritization. We see it important to be a countywide effort because for us, we serve 28 municipalities. To have 28 different systems for TSP for us would make things very difficult. Would also be a lot more expensive, so if we were able to as a county to kind of come together as one and find one TSP system that we can use, it'll be cheaper for us all and be beneficial for our snow plows all the way down to our police cars, to our fire trucks, and our buses. So just throwing that out there. Yeah.
Nathan, by way of example, are you able to quantify what the difference means for the user? So like take Route 2, downtown Akron to Green, how long does it take now? How many stops under BRT? What would that look like as a goal?
Yep. So this goal right now, East West Broad in Columbus, it cuts it in half the time it takes. So right now it takes an hour. If you're at the farthest reach to get downtown, it'll take a half hour. Now the thing about the stations is, so you're sacrificing the amount of stops you have. It's about half, but you get somewhere faster.
Thank you.
Do you increase the number of buses?
No. Because you have half as many stops. Now, the number will go up because you're serving every 10 minutes. So that number does go up. Yes. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Nice job.
Thanks. All right, we've reached adjournment. Next regular meeting is Thursday, September 25th, 2025 at 1:30 p.m. here at the district office. We get to adjourn and we'll need a motion to adjourn, please. Do I have a motion?
Can you make a motion?
Second.
Thank you, Bob. And a second. We have a motion and a second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, you don't get a vote.